continuing with Pikudei and the Mishkan topics, we reached a stage yesterday where, right, Moshe set up the Mishkan. We're getting ready for the eighth day. There's been 7 days already of Miluim. The Miluim is like filling the dedication, the right, of the Mizbeach. Moshe operated for that week as a Kohen Gadol. On day 8, Aaron takes over. And we're told that this was the moment that was clear to everyone in the world that Klal Yisroel, all the Jews, had been forgiven for the sin of the Egel, and the Jews were on a high level. So, turning to one of the aspects of the Mishkan, was this, right, the three collections, the Shkolim. And we read for the last two Shabbos on first Kisisa, which started with it, and then last week's Parsha Shkolim. And we're told by all of the rabbis and Chazal that Parsha Shkolim is read either on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Adar, or on Shabbos, if Rosh Chodesh Adar, or actually Butter Bays, this year falls out then. And Rav Shmuel Zilber, one of the Beis Yaakov Menalim in Toronto, wrote the following word, vort. He gives a weekly vort. He says, obviously, if you look at the Mishnah in Shkolim, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they, on the first day of Adar, they began collecting for the New Year's karbonos, the communal sacrifices, and for other things like that. Because the Jewish year for this purpose began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and so we get ready a month before. Then he quotes from the Megillah, where we know that Haman tried to buy the Jews from Ahasuerus, basically have, they would be his peons, so he could basically decimate them totally. And we look at the Gemara in Megillah on Yud Gimel Beis, and the Gemara tells us a famous vort that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created the world, knew, of course, that one day Haman would give a vast fortune of money to, or would make the offer at least, to give the money to Ahasuerus. And he would give them a certain amount that he calculated. We know that Ahasuerus said, don't even bother giving me the money. I'll consider it received because I want to decimate them as much as you. But it says that in contemplation somehow of this event, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisroel the mitzvah of giving the machzis a shekel from the time of the Mishkan down. And he quotes Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, and he says, what coins are we talking about? Which were the coins that offset the Haman offer of money? And he says, of Yonathan Eibshitz, that we look at the history, and we went through this a couple weeks ago, that King Koresh allowed the Jews to begin building the Beis HaMikdash. And obviously, Klal Yisroel started giving Shkolim, because it was only a 70-year exile, and they knew what the procedure would be. And then he says, we know, we learned that when Ahasuerus became king, he stopped the building of the Beis HaMikdash. He listened to the Jewish enemies in Yerushalayim, and he himself didn't like Jews. He was an anti-Semite just like Haman, and he stopped it. And at that point, the Klal Yisrael should have stopped giving shkolim. Ahasuerus had now thwarted the effort to build the Beis HaMikdash. However, the Jews didn't do that. They realized that Yirmiyahu's prophecy was still there, and that within a period of 70 years, no matter how it would be calculated, there would be a binyan bayis sheni, second Beis HaMikdash, and so they kept giving shkolim. They kept giving it until the time when Daryavesh allowed them to again build the Beis HaMikdash. These shkolim being given from the time of Ahasuerus' decree up to the time of the actual beginning of the true building of the second Beis HaMikdash, that was the schus, the merit that offset anything Haman tried to do. And he quotes, I guess, Mefarshim, and he says himself, although today we can't give shkolim to the Beis HaMikdash, we know that every Purim, around the time of the Megillah, we have the three silver dollars that we pick up as a commemoration of the three trumos, the three times they gave a machzis a shekel, and we have staka plates next to them, and we give staka. Again, this is our demonstration to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we too fervently believe that the time will come when we'll be able to give shkolim to the actual third Beis HaMikdash. The Rav, in his drasha between Mincha and Marv last night, told an amazing story. He said, in our parsha, we talk about all the various, all of the various kalim in the Beis HaMikdash, and he said, I'm going to focus on a vort from Rav Zilberstein that talks about the Shulchan. And he says that the Shulchan had the Lechem upon him. And he says, at the time of the, he says, this story was given down through the generations in his family from the time of the Arizal in Sfat. There was another Rav in Sfat who, during Parshas Tetzaveh, mentioned the, or maybe Truma, mentioned the Lechem upon him, the 12 loaves of fresh bread that were put on the Shulchan every Shabbos, and which had to be on permanently, so when the new, as in first one came on, you would back up last week's. And they remained hot the entire week. And the rabbi said, poor HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're told, had so much hana from these lechem haponim, it was in, credible, but he doesn't have them. There was a unlearned but very devoted person in the shul who heard this speech and it struck him. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is missing something, something physical. He says, I don't understand, but if HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wants this, I'm going to make an effort to see it's done. And he went home and he told his wife what the Rav had said. And they decided that every Friday afternoon, they would take whatever meager amount of money they had, they would take some, and the wife would bake 12 little challahs for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's lechem upon him. Came the first Friday, and the husband goes into the shul. He opens the Aron HaKodesh and places the 12 challahs there and leaves. He, shortly thereafter, the gabbai of the shul comes in, and the gabbai sees when he opens the Aron HaKodesh to put the Sefer Torah in the right spot for laning, that he's, ach, look, somebody knows that I'm not well-to-do, and so they left 12 challahs for my family and I, so that we'll have a great Shabbos, and they were doing the mitzvah in the greatest way, anonymously. And this continues for quite a number of weeks, and the gentleman and his wife are thrilled because every Shabbos morning when they open the Aron, there's no challahs, and they believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu took their challahs. And they are the happiest people in the world. Comes Shabbos HaGadol, a couple days before Pesach. And again, this is done. This Shabbos, between the time that the gentleman came to put the challahs into the Aron, the Rav came, and he wanted to open the Aron HaKodesh for a reason, and lo and behold, he found the 12 challahs. And he says, calls the gabbai, and he says, Ma pitom, what is this? How did this happen? And he said, I don't know, but obviously somebody wants to put something in here for me every Shabbos, and I take it, and he makes our Shabbos and my family. The Rav says, yeah, but he says, if somebody did it today, they might do it Erev Pesach too. We got to find out who did it. And they go and they search and they find this Yid. And the Rav says to the Yid, what was this custom that you adopted? And he said, I heard your shmooze back on Truma. And you said a Kodesh Baruch who misses his challahs. So I thought I would give it to him. What happens is the rabbi says, my dear man, you made a major mistake. And nobody can bring lechem upon him other than the Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. The man went home devastated. His wife was devastated. Before Shabbos, the Arizal walked in to see the rabbi. And he said, "What did you do?" And he says, "You must know what I don't." He says, "You took this person and you made him sabrochen. You broke him." And he says, "Let me tell you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that these two individuals gave the greatest tefillah in all of Tzfat every Erev Shabbos, and that tefillah and those challahs were the most kadosh thing in the world." And he said to the rabbi, "Here's what I know." He says, "I don't know how you undo the problem, but let me tell you this. If this yid is still devastated, you are not going to live out the year." And the Arizal left. And Rav Zilberstein said, "This story has been given down through my family all the years." And so the question is, well, in what connection did Rav Zilberstein say this? And so the Rav said, there was a fellow who was writing a sefer on Shiluach HaKan. Shiluach HaKan is that mitzvah that talks about when a mother bird is sitting on a nest, don't take the children, you've got to chase away the mother. How you do it, etc. Apparently there's a myriad of halachas. And the man was looking for dedications. And a yid comes over to him and he says, "I am thrilled that you are writing this sefer, and I am a Holocaust survivor, and I can afford to sponsor the entire sefer, and I want to do it. And let me tell you why." He said, "One day, during those terrible years, while we were still in our town, my cow gave birth to two young calves, and then the cow sat down on them and was going to squish them to death. So what I did was, I did Shiluach HaKan. I took the cow, I let it off, right, and left the two calves in the field. And I went into the barn, and I tied up the cow so it shouldn't go back and basically kill these young ones, and I was going to take care of them. This took a little bit of time." And he said, "When I walked out, there was nobody left in the town but me. The Nazis had come, they swooped in, they got everyone, and because I was deep in the barn, they didn't look, and I was saved." He said, "I was only saved because of this mitzvah of saving the calves." And the one who was writing the sefer listened to the story and said, "Hold on. I don't want to burst his bubble now and tell him that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan only applies to the mother bird on top of her nest of fledging chicks." And so that's why he went to Rav Zilberstein. And he asked Rav Zilberstein, "What do I do?" And he said, you're right, you can't burst his bubble. This yid believes that what he did saved his life." And he said, "And I have no way to tell you whether that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbin or not." He said, yes, he's going to see in the Sefer that Shiluach HaKan applies only to chicks, but you've got to approach him in the nicest way possible and tell him that, yes, he met the spirit of the law. And it may well be that God rewarded him because God wants the heart of people. And when people do something to do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos, even if it's not in the exact manner, as long as they're not doing anything wrong, you may get tremendous chayr in heaven. And that is why he told that story. Rabbi Friend points out that Bezalel, as we said, was the architect of the Beis HaMikdash, the number one. And it tells us that Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, that's his yichus. And we're told that Hur was a child of Miriam and I think Kalev. We know that Hur was the one who stood up with Aaron HaKohen at the time of the golden calf and objected. And the Jews, probably the Erev, were so angry they killed him. And yet, they went on, and it didn't stop the creation of the golden calf. So the question became, did Hur give up his life for nothing? Did he accomplish anything at all? And my friend says, when we mention Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur, the Torah is telling us it was not in vain. The reason Bezalel was chosen to build the Mikdash was because he was, as we said, Bezal Kael, in the shadow of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. He wasn't the greatest orator or writer in his generation, but God imbued him with great talents. And because he was willing to do what God needed, God all of a sudden gave him architectural and artisan schools. But Bezalel had an unbelievable attachment to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, such that he told Moshe, we got to change the order of how we build the Mishkan. We've got to build the outside first. This ability came from his genealogy back to Hur. These are qualities that went from Hur to Uri to Bezalel. The willingness to be Meiser Nefesh, to do whatever has to be done for the honor of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The Mishkan is one of the opinions, is that it was the Kapara, the atonement for the sin of the golden calf. Hur died, and Bezalel built it. He was the general contractor. He was the architect. Hur didn't instantly stop the golden calf, but his heritage was that he gave Klal Yisrael the antidote. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways are far from the ways of human beings. No one understood what happened. In retrospect, Why did Hur have to die in vain? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed months later that it was not, in fact, in vain. The Pasuk says, Re'u, see, take note, when it introduces Bezalel. And this means, take note of the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu operated. Take note of the way that the sin and the kapara were brought in this area, and how we ended up with the Mikdash in the desert, which was the forerunner of the first, second Beis HaMikdash, and will also be the forerunner of the bias, the third bias, which will last forever. One of the questions I always wonder about is that when the Bayis Shlishi is built, will we actually get the ability to see Bezalel's Mishkan, which, as we said, was impregnable, unbreakable, and was one of the greatest things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever had constructed on his behalf.